God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. That's going to get really annoying. Am I the only one hearing the beeping? Do you guys hear it too? Are the walls moving? Are there colors? All right, just check. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. You can unmute yourself and say hello if you're in your first 30 days.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Mike, welcome. Awesome. Glad you're here. Anybody else? All right. Now I'm going to take away your ability to unmute yourself. Ha! Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open speaker asket basket. Tonight, we are very excited to welcome Judith from Bismarck, North Dakota, to tell her story. And after she does that, somewhere around the top of the hour, we'll take a short break, call for announcements past the Seven Tradition basket, and then we'll get to reconvene and ask her questions. The questions that we're going to ask her are the questions that you send in. You'll see a user called Questions. It's really Larry. But if, as you think of questions, feel free to chat them to the user Questions. And that's it. That's everything I've got to say. I'm really super excited for Judith tonight. I don't want to take up another minute of her time. I give you Judith.
Thank you so much, David. And thank you to everybody who is a member of this group. Thank you for those of you who showed up on Super Bowl Sunday. You guys are my people. I was expecting three, but I'm so glad that to see you all here. Thank you for letting me participate in your meeting. And thank you for allowing me to participate in my own recovery. What a great way to sort of wrap up my Sunday. I really appreciate being able to be here with you all. I want to welcome anyone who is new. I believe it was Evan. Is that right? That is new with us tonight. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that if you're new tonight, life has not been going very well lately. And I can tell you, based on my personal experience and what I have observed through the years in Alcoholics Anonymous, it does get better if we do what is outlined by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I will talk a little bit about in my story, I hope that you aren't as stubborn. Anyone that's new, I hope you're not as stubborn as I was, because I refused to do what the big book said. And I refused to get a sponsor. I refused to do the steps for about a year. And it did take me to the gates of insanity and death. And I almost took my life sober after a year. So I hope you're not as hard-headed as I am, and that you dive in right into the deep end so that your life can quickly transform. My name is Judith. The most important thing you can ever know about me is I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January the 19th, 2009. So I just was able to celebrate 12 years of sobriety. And And that those 12 years, it still baffles me. I don't know how it happened. I really don't. I can't explain it other than the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was somebody who was a daily drinker for the last 5 years of my drinking, for sure. I was a daily drinker, and I didn't have the ability to stay sober. And the fact that I just celebrated 12 years, which seemed to go by in a blink of an eye, is absolutely amazing to me. That date is the most important date in my life. I know what I am. I'm an alcoholic, and I know what that means. And that means I have a fatal illness. It means that this illness is progressing, and it means that it's going to kill me, drunk or sober, if I don't treat it. So because I know these things, every day when I wake up, I have something on my calendar to protect that date, because that date never has to change if I'm working this program. And I don't want that date to ever change. And so I do something every day. I'm very active. And that doesn't mean I'm in a meeting every day, although it seems like in this Zoom or this digital era of AA, it does seem like I'm on a meeting every day. But I don't necessarily mean a meeting every day, but I'm doing something related to AA, related to my recovery, to protect that date. I also want to mention that I do have a sponsor now, and my sponsor knows that they're my sponsor. I use my sponsor. My sponsor was somebody that took me through the steps, guided me through the steps, helped me go through them, follow the instructions, but now today leads me daily by example and continues to point me back to the solutions that are contained in our program. And that's amazing, a wonderful thing to have. I like to say that I need a sponsor because I need somebody to read the label on the outside of the jar, right? I'm in that jar. My life is that jar, and I'm inside it, and I can't see the label. So I need someone who is not emotionally attached to me on the outside that can read the label of what is going on and help me find the solution when I am in my life and so consumed with me that I can't see the label. So that I have found that to be very valuable. I also have the privilege to sponsor women or sponsor people. That is the bright spot in my life today. I went from someone who really doesn't like people to someone who actually cares about someone, you know, and I really, really care about them and their lives. And between having my sponsor on one end pulling me and my sponsees on the other end pushing me, I'm exactly where I need to be, smack dab in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, safe and protected, which is where I definitely need to be. I also have a home group. My home group meets on Thursdays, 7 p.m. Central Time. And we were Zooming long before the pandemic. And we go through the steps for 24 weeks, the traditions for 12 weeks, and the concepts for 12 weeks. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, you're free to join us on Thursday nights. So that's sort of a few of the important things to me as far as the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is involved. But I have to admit that I was not always like this. I was a long way from this. In fact, I hated people like me. I really did. I am the type of person that I would have stayed away from when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So basically, to give you a snapshot of what kind of person I am, you know, what I was like, I would have to say that I'm very baffled by life. And what I mean by baffled by life is that I never can find my spot, so to speak. If I am with Dave, I'm pretty sure that Scott looks like he's having more fun. And so I'm going to ditch Dave, kick him to the curb, go and hang out with Scott, because he looks like that's where it's at. But the funny thing is I'm always looking over my shoulder. Did I make a mistake? Is Dave really, you know, the one having, you know, the good time and where I need to be? It's always like I'm always seeking something outside myself, someone outside myself. I'm the type of alcoholic who is very willing to go to any lengths to get what I want. The problem is that it's always something I don't have. I used to live by the motto, I'll be happy when. And you can fill in anything after that when. I'll be happy when I graduate. I'll be happy when I get that job. I'll be happy when I get that promotion. I'll be happy when I get him. And then I'll be happy when I get rid of him and get him. Lately, I've been hearing a lot about I'll be happy when this COVID thing is over. And like I mentioned, I'm the type of alcoholic that is willing to go to any lengths to get what I want. And so I was very driven in life and I got a lot of my wins. I did. I would lock onto something like a radar and I would go for it. And I got so many of my wins. I'm very blessed. And I may be happy for a day, a week, a month. The shelf life of most of my relationships would be about a year. But then the funny thing would happen and what it was is the shine would wear off. And I would think, well, that wasn't it either. I made a mistake. And so I would lock on to something else out there and off I would go again. My whole life, I wasn't present. It was always in the future. I'll be happy when. And I was never here in my own life. And I was baffled as to why I couldn't be successful at this seemingly most simple thing in life that everybody else seemed to have, and that is happiness. Why couldn't I find it? Why couldn't I experience a long-lasting happiness? The other thing, I don't know if around where you guys are, you hear this in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, but people, I've heard a lot of people in AA say that they were always told they had a lot of potential, but they just didn't use it, right? I don't know, anyone, you know, been told they have a lot of potential, but they just didn't use it? Well, that's not my story. I have zero potential. I have proof that I have zero potential. And that's because a while ago, a couple years ago, my mom, you know how parents, they save, some parents save the things that you did when you were growing up, little drawings that you did, report cards, things like that. Well, she saved all this. And a few years ago, she gave us myself and my siblings these boxes full of our stuff. And I was going through the box and I found my eighth grade report card. Now, I was raised in Australia. I came to North Dakota when I was 18. But so I was looking through this and I found my eighth grade report card from Australia. And on one side were all the grades, which were horrendous. But that's not the point. On the other side, there was all these questions that the parents were supposed to fill out and then send back in. And one of these questions that my mom filled out asked, what potential does your child show? And I kid you not, my mom wrote, Judith has yet to show any potential, but we pray every day. So here I am in life. I'm baffled by life. I just can't seem to get what everybody else has, which is happiness. And I have zero potential. Not a winning combination for when I came up against something that is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I was out for the count from day one. And that day one happened. I, like I said, I came over. to America. I was only supposed to visit. My mom's American, my dad's Australian. So I came over here to visit my mom's side of the family. I was only supposed to stay for a month, but I met a guy. It's always the story. And within a month at 18, I was engaged. And a couple months later, I was married by 18. And I had never been around drinking. My parents to this day, my father just passed away. He had never had a drop. He was 86 when he passed. And my mom is 87 and she is yet to have a drop of alcohol. It was nowhere in our existence. When I got married, I also married a non-drinker. I had never had experience with it at all. It just wasn't, I know it's really odd, very odd these days. So my first drink of alcohol was when I was 28 years old. Really, really late, I know. But the thing of it is that I just turned this month, I hate to say it, 56 years old. And 28 was a long time ago. And yet I remember that day when I had my first drink, like it was not yesterday, but a couple months ago or last year. I really do. I remember where I was. I remember who I was with. And I remember what I said. And that day, this guest in my home had what I now know to be vodka. And they said, hey, do you want a drink? Well, I'm 28. There's nothing wrong with having a drink. And I said, sure. Granted, I could have used that drink 20 years earlier. But I said, sure. And she mixed me a drink and it was vodka and orange juice. And I took that drink and I took a big swig. And I remember as clear as a bell saying the following. I said, this tastes disgusting. Now I know why we don't drink. Why would anyone drink this stuff? We just ruined a perfectly good glass of orange juice. But the interesting thing about it was, in between each of those sentences, I was taking another big swig. Now that's baffling. I've tasted Brussels sprouts once in my life. In fact, I've had one bite of Brussels sprouts to know that I never need to experience Brussels sprouts again. So why am I continuing to drink something that tastes disgusting to me? Now, later on, granted, I would have told you I liked it because I did acquire a taste for it. And I did like it at the end, but not, I remember that first drink, I did not, it was foul tasting to me. So why? You know, in the big book, it talks about there's an invisible line, you know, we're drinking and drinking and somewhere along the line, there's this invisible line that we step across into alcoholism. Maybe it's because I started drinking so late, but I know exactly where my invisible line is. It's right here at my lips. Because from that first drink, it fundamentally changed my life. It was like, you know, the safe crackers that come in and you know, in the movies and they have the stethoscopes and they put the one end up against the safe and they're turning that knob and they're carefully listening for those tumblers and they hear the tumbler and then they turn it the other way till they hear the tumbler and then turn it back and then the safe opens up. That day, it felt as if the tumblers of my life just went click, click, click. And a whole new world opened up. It was like the genie came out of the bottle. And little did I know that I was to climb into that bottle or that I was going to climb into that bottle and live until I was 44 in the circumference of that bottle. From that day, it became my master. And I don't say that to be dramatic. Or for effect, it is the truth. Within that first day, my drinking immediately went underground because, see, my husband did not drink. We did not drink. our religion didn't want us to drink. So we didn't drink. So I had to immediately go underground. Within not even a year, but within that first year of me having a drink, I was divorced from a very good man without a reason. I was excommunicated from the church. I lost my friends, my faith, my community. Later on, I was to lose my self-worth, my dignity, my morals. And really, it's not even accurate or honest to say I lost these things. Because the truth is, I served them up on a silver platter. Because alcohol was my master. Because here's the thing. If you get between me and that bottle, I don't care how much I love you. You're going to lose every time. Every time I will go through you, I will go around you, under you, over you. I don't even see you. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know that I am being driven by something that I have zero understanding about. From that first day, I was off to the races, and it dictated everything that I did from that point on. Now, I was not a daily drinker at the very beginning, but every time I drank, it was different from anyone else that I was around. During my drinking, I got married a second time. I thought, you know, I met him and then, you know, in a fun situation, a bar, whatever. And he looked fun, but the problem is, now I know, is that he was a normal drinker and he's not one of us. And pretty soon he would start saying stupid stuff, like, don't you think you've had enough? I'd just say, shut up and eat your cereal. Now, I'm kidding, sorta. But my drinking had to go underground again. And so I destroyed that marriage. I took that guy to hell and back. And finally he said, I will not participate in watching you kill yourself. And he said, I'm leaving for the weekend. When I come back, you need to be gone. He was the most healthy Al-Anon person that's never been to Al-Anon that I've ever met. You know, he knew. And he did a wise thing by getting away from me. So fast forwarding to, let me put it this way, just to wrap up what I was like. I'm a blackout drunk. There are vast amounts of time in my life between 28 and 44 that I simply don't have recollection of. I was recently in Boston and someone said, have you ever been to Boston before? And I said, I don't know. Because I used to travel a lot for my job. And I remember being in a city that started with the letter B. But I can't tell you if it was Boston or Baltimore. I really can't, because I did my work in the hotel and I never left the hotel lobby. I don't know what happened. I don't remember. So I'm a blackout drinker. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I don't see anyone. I don't see my family or my friends, meaning I don't see that they are suffering. I would have told you over and over, I'm just having fun. I'm not hurting anyone. Get off my case. But if you would talk to my family or either one of my husbands and ask them how much fun they were having, you would get a different story completely than any little. I don't really make, like, I used to have all these stories make people laugh, and I just realized there's nothing funny, because now I see what I was doing to the people around me who love me. If you had the misfortune to love me during those years, you suffered terribly. I was a criminal, and by that I mean I drove absolutely out of my mind, blackout drunk, 4, 5, 6 times a week. I should never have a license. I never got a DUI. I don't know how, but I don't deserve the privilege of driving. I also, this is embarrassing because at 40, we're supposed to have a little common sense. But at 40, I was introduced to cocaine and developed a huge issue with cocaine. All that did was be able to make me drink faster and longer. That's the only thing, really. But I'm somewhat grateful for that because I only lasted 4 years after the introduction of that with my drinking. It took me down hard and fast. So I guess I'm somewhat grateful for that. But I'm a criminal. And here's the deal. What I didn't mention before is I am an attorney by trade. And during this time, the last 5 years of my drinking, my job was, I was legal counsel for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So by day, I am an officer of the court. I am a super attorney, you know, doing things, you know. And by night, I'm a criminal. I'm a daily drinker. I start drinking at 5:15, and I drink until I pass out around midnight or 1. And every morning I come to and I say, not again, not again. I'm not going to do that again. I have to go and look at my car and walk around my car. Is my car even home? How did I get home? Did I go anywhere? Look at my phone, try and piece my night together. Did someone come over? Did I go somewhere? Where's my car? Is there any dents in my car? What happened? Not again. Not again. But you see, I don't know anything about alcoholism because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. Not once did it occur to me that I was an alcoholic. I can't be an alcoholic. An alcoholic to me, I guess I had this idea that it was some old dude. Sorry, guys. But it was some old dude that was homeless, that lived under a bridge and drank something mysterious out of a brown paper bag. That's an alcoholic, not me. I'm a very successful attorney. Can't be an alcoholic. It didn't occur to me. I was baffled by how in the world I had everything. Everything anyone could want. You know, I tell my sponsees, they often say, well, if I had him back or her back, or if I had a car, if I had a job, if I had my house back, if so-and-so wouldn't have died or whatever, I wouldn't need to drink. And I'm like, yeah, sweetheart, I had all that and I couldn't stay sober. Doesn't matter what I have or don't have. It doesn't matter if I'm in a relationship or not. It doesn't matter if people are alive or dead. I don't need an excuse to drink. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. That is what I do. And I am powerless not to. But at that point in time, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I didn't know that even though every morning when I would come to sick, 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 oh, I would be so sick every morning. Every morning. And by this time, I'm alone. You know, I've destroyed 2 marriages, multiple other relationships, and I'm alone. So I'm not promising anyone, but I'm swearing to myself, not again. And yet I had no idea about the mental obsession of alcoholism. And what would happen at around about 4 o'clock, this little trivial thought would float in. And I had all these reasons why I'm not drinking tonight. You know, my job was on thin ice. People were starting to, you know, I was really starting to get in trouble. My personal life was destroyed. I was disconnected from everyone, my family, my friends. I had no one left. I'm in debt. credit card debt alone when I got sober was $90,000. That's just credit card, because I would use my paycheck to buy those illegal substances, the cocaine and alcohol, and I would live on credit. So I'm in financial debt. I'm in emotional turmoil. I've got conflict everywhere. I've lost everything. My job is on thin ice, and I want to die on a daily basis. I just don't want to wake up. So I have all these good reasons why I'm not going to drink. But then around 4 o'clock, this little trivial thought would float in, and it could be as trivial as, it's Sunday. And my mind would, well, if it was Sunday, I would have been drinking from this morning, so it doesn't count. It would be like, oh, it's Wednesday. It's hump day. You know, come on. You've made it this far. We're celebrating. It's Wednesday. And that little trivial thought would, without any resistance, push all these logical reasons out of my head, and I would be left with this one thought. And off I would go again. And I would tell myself every day, that this went on day after day after day after day for years. I am highly educated. You would think I would get a clue. How can I be so delusional? As this scenario was replayed like Groundhog's Day every day for years. And every day I would say to myself, all right, fine, but I'll just have one. So I didn't understand the physical part of alcoholism either. And what that was is that as soon as I took a drink inside of me, it would trigger something in me that the vast majority of the population does not have. We are the lucky ones. And what happens is that it looks like I change my mind. Never once does it occur to me or appear to me that alcohol is in control. I just change my mind. Oh, forget that. Work is not important. It's not that bad. I don't need anyone anyway. So what if I destroyed another relationship? I don't need them. So what if I'm in debt? Whatever. So what if I need to pay bills? I can do that tomorrow. So what if I need to do laundry or clean my apartment? Nothing's important anymore. And I think I'm changing my mind, and I pour myself a second. By that time in my drinking, I was up to like 4 large bottles of wine a night, or a big jug of vodka a night. But I'm only gonna have one. And the next morning I come to all over again, like Groundhog's Day, and replay that scenario. So that's a snapshot of where I was. And what happened was, it was Martin Luther King Jr. weekend in January. And I was on a run, you know, because I didn't have to work on Monday. I had to get out of town. What I used to do was, because of the cocaine thing, I would always go to the Native American reservations. And that's where I would buy what I needed to buy. And then I could drink how I had such a high profile, prestigious job that I could not ever drink in public. I intuitively knew this would not be a good idea. No one needed to tell me this, because if I would do anything in public, if I would get into trouble, if I would have gotten a DUI, which I, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I would have been absolutely out of that job. I had to really, really be careful. So I would go to the reservations, and that's where I could drink how I needed to drink. And I also could purchase the cocaine. So that's what I was doing that weekend. I was doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing. The party had been over years ago. every weekend I thought I was going to be able to get there again. You know, where there is, you're almost there, and you just, I never could get there. I hadn't been there for years. But every weekend I had this delusion that it's going to be okay. I'm going to, you know, whatever. But it wasn't working that weekend. It was not working. And once again, I came to somewhere I didn't want to be, with people I didn't want to be with. And I just had to get out of there. The end result, long story short, is Sunday morning, you know, I hightailed it out of where I was. And I was sitting in a bar at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. And I had two friends left really at that point in time. And one of them had disappeared 2 months before that. I didn't really know where he was or what was going on. He just disappeared. And what I did not know was 2 months before that day, he went to Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober. And the difference between him at 2 months and me at 2 months when I was sober is night and day, because he immediately dived into AA. He got a sponsor. He was working the steps. He was well armed with the facts about himself and alcoholism and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was ready that day. Because I had been traveling through his town, and I called him and I said, "Hey, I'm in town. Do you want a drink?" Okay. But it's so funny. This is at 10:30 on a Sunday morning, and I'm saying, "Do you want to have a drink?" Not coffee, but I don't have a problem. I'm not an alcoholic, but this is what I'm doing. So because of what he had been doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, he was ready for my call. In fact, a few years ago, I found out that we never compared the story, but I found out that morning he was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he felt his phone vibrate, and he looked down and he saw my name, and he didn't know what I wanted, but he knew what I needed. We drank together. We did drugs together. And so he stepped out of the meeting and he answered my call and he said, I'll come meet you. And when he walked in, I could hardly recognize him. His whole physical features had changed. I am not exaggerating at all, but his actual physical, he was a really, really chronic alcoholic with a huge drug problem. He looked like the walking dead. And after 2 months, there was the most amazing transformation. His eyes were alive. But more importantly, it's just like he oozed this joy, this happiness, this freedom. And believe it or not, at 2 months, now I could never have done this, but at 2 months, he sat across from me in that bar while I drank in front of him. I had no regard for him. I didn't care that he said he was trying, that he was sober. What's that to me? It sucks to be you, you know. I couldn't even imagine. What are you talking about? But he sat across from me and told me what he had been doing for the last 2 months. He didn't need to tell me about his drinking. I was there. But he told me about what he had been doing. And quite frankly, I don't remember a word he said. I don't. But I will never forget the evidence that was sitting across from me. It had such a profound effect on me. I wanted what I saw. His eyes were alive. He was smiling, genuine, and he was sober, and I didn't know what was going on. That day actually was so important to me. I actually wear this little ID bracelet, and it has the coordinates the latitude and longitude or whatever it's called of that bar, where he came and carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, because in that moment, my life fundamentally changed again. Alcohol had changed it the first time, and someone with 2 months of sobriety changed it the second time. And that night, I kept drinking, okay. But that night, I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in intoxicated. And no one said, oh, she's drunk or she's whatever. They just said, welcome. And they gave me a big book. And they said, keep coming back. And the thing of it is that I didn't know what you guys had, but I desperately wanted it. You were all so happy, and I just was so dead inside. I describe it like I had gangrene of the soul. It was so rotting and black and gross. If I could have ripped my skin off and escaped out of me, I would have. The problem is I, you know, here's the thing. I went home, I detoxed on my own. I had no idea how dangerous that was. And I was very, very sick. But from that night, because they gave me a 24-hour coin, and it seems really, really kind of ridiculous or childish. But when they gave me that 24-hour coin, I thought, do I have to tell them that I'm not sober right now? I'm like, they couldn't tell, all right? Pretty sure they could tell. But I thought, I took this coin home, this token home, and I thought, if I can earn this token, if I can stay sober for 24 hours, then it proves I don't have a problem. What kind of crazy thinking that is that? Oh, yes, if I can stay sober for 24 hours, I obviously am not an alcoholic. See, I had no understanding of what was going on. Well, what happened is I started detoxing. And the only way I stayed sober is I stayed in bed all day, sick, sick, sick. But that night, the next night at 8 p.m., I went back shaking, and they kept, are you sure you don't need to go to the hospital? I had no idea what they were talking about because I had no experience with this. Hallucinations, the whole bit. And I kept going back. I don't know why. I have no idea why, except after that hour, I felt better. For 1 hour out of 24, I could breathe. For 1 hour, I felt safe. I literally could breathe for 1 hour. The rest, the other 23 was hell. Because here's the deal. I would like to tell you that I, like my friend, dove into Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't. Because you see, you had that G-O-D word in everything. And I had been excommunicated from the church, and I was full of white hot rage and hatred and anger and resentment against anything spiritual. And you weren't fooling me with this higher power thing. I know what you're saying, you know, and I didn't want nothing to do with it, but I kept coming back because here's the deal. And so many of us are afraid, and I can speak from my experience. I was greatly offended by your spiritual program. You know, I hear a lot of it around, oh, we don't want to scare the newcomer off with our spiritual program. Well, I can tell you, I was greatly offended. I ridiculed you all. I mocked you. I said horrible things in the meetings to you all. I was arrogant and angry. I was not very likable, and I wasn't nice to be around. I was offended. But you see, alcohol is a great persuader. And I had the gift of desperation, so it didn't matter how offended I got by you guys and your spiritual program. I kept coming back because somehow I knew that if I didn't come back, I would die. Because with you was, you know, the funny thing is it says where two or three of us are gathered, the power is present. And I didn't even know that, and yet I felt it. Because I felt better for 1 hour. See, I had my own program of sobriety. I was physically sober and I was going to AA every single day, didn't miss a day. But my program of sobriety involved going to work, going to a meeting, going home, go to bed, get up, go to work, go to a meeting, go home, go to bed, get up, go to work, go home, go to a meeting, go home, go to bed. I kept myself in this tight box. I was wound so tight. And if I deviated from any of that, I knew I would drink. And the whole time I would sit myself in my fancy office and the obsession was so strong. It felt like my throat was closing. I could not breathe. And when it would hit me, I had an office in the Capitol and it was beautiful. And I'd be sitting amongst the mahogany and the brass and the marble and the mosaic tile. And it would hit me and I would look up at the clock and I would clench my fists and I would rock watching the clock. How long is this one going to last? And I would rock and I would say to myself, just don't drink, just don't drink, just don't drink. And I would be doubled over. That's my program of sobriety. They would bring the women inmates from the state penitentiary over to the Capitol Gardens. We had very beautiful gardens, landscaping and rose gardens. And they would bring them over and I had a window office and I would look out over the rose gardens and I would see these women come and they would be in their orange jumpsuit things and with inmates stamped on the back. And I would be sitting there rocking me in my fancy clothes in a fancy office with a huge paycheck, a sports car convertible in the parking lot. And I would look out of the window and I would envy them. Because in my mind, in my crazy mixed up thinking, they seemed to be more free than I was. And I thought, I envied them. I literally envied them. Out there in their inmate jumpsuits tending the roses, because I thought at least they don't have to fight anymore. At least their decision is taken away from them. They get told what to do. I cannot fight this anymore. I cannot handle this battle anymore. I lasted that way for 11 and a half months. And at the end of 11 and a half months, I had a loaded pistol and I was going to take my life. The funny thing happened. What I now think is divine intervention from a power that I despised, loathed, hated, rejected, whatever. But there was some divine intervention that happened. And what happened was, right as I'm going to take my life, I had reached the gates of insanity and death at 11 and a half months sober, sitting in the middle of you for 11 and a half months, didn't miss a day. And just a comment about that. If you would have asked me during that time, are you an Alcoholics Anonymous? I would have said, yes. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go every day. Of course, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the truth of the matter is I was observing you all in Alcoholics Anonymous. For some reason, I thought attendance at meetings meant I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just sitting in meetings, listening to you all and doing nothing, not getting a sponsor, not working the steps and dying of untreated alcoholism in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every night. So what happened was I had mentioned that the illegal stuff, the cocaine that I was buying on the reservations and whatnot, were right around that 11 and a half months, a little bit before that, I had, because I was so miserable, I left a job that I loved because someone offered me more power, more prestige, a better paycheck as an assistant U.S. attorney. That's the federal jurisdiction. If you're familiar with it, you know, the people that deal with the FBI and you just don't want to be involved with them. And I was offered to be an assistant U.S. attorney, which means I would prosecute. And the thing of it is that all I saw was ego. And I'm miserable. And if I'm miserable, I do a geographic. I do a geographic in relationships or where I live or jobs. And I'm like, well, this must be what's wrong. So I'm going to take this job. But I did not pause to look at the job description. And the job description was prosecute violent and drug crime on the reservations, because that's federal jurisdiction. And sure, right about that, right when I'm going to blow my brains out, I got my first case. They had sent me to FBI training, you know, the training legal Department of Justice school down in South Carolina. And I came back, had my first case, and sure enough, I knew the person very well. And all hell broke loose. So here I am at 11 and a half months sober, and my past comes back to haunt me. And it was not good. Long story short, it involved three FBI agents. The U.S. attorney flew in, two assistant U.S. attorneys, so six men in suits in a room interrogating me for 3 hours. And at that point, I knew my life was over. I'm heading to the federal penitentiary. I did not break. I did not give them any, because you see, in my program of sobriety, the rocking, just don't drink program of sobriety, there's no honesty in that program. And so I was not telling them anything, but I knew my life was over. And they told me that to leave, they would be contacting me. They were going to go talk to the guy who they had arrested. See, they were very excited. They thought they had gotten the biggest drug dealer on the reservation. Yeah, they hadn't, but they thought they had. The problem is that I had been in a room with this man. He knew me very well, doing things I should never have been doing. And so they were going to talk to him, and then they were going to come. And I knew he was going to make a deal, because I knew that there's nothing more that they hate than one of their own doing the things that I had been doing. And I knew they'd give him a deal. He would go free, and I'm going to prison. So right at that time when I'm going to take my life, my whole life implodes, explodes, whatever, both at once, everything. And so what I did is I knew they were going to come and find me. That and my best thinking, you know, you hear this in AA a lot as well. They say my best thinking got me to AA. Okay, that's not my experience either. My best thinking gets me high, drunk, or dead. Because after sitting with you guys for 11 and a half months, not doing your program, the spiritual program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my best thinking in the parking lot that day is, fine, I'll go to the reservation, do what I need to do to get what I need to get, and then end it. That's my best thinking after 11 and a half months with you guys. And then from outside of me, another thought came. And this thought said, you know, they have got good AA in that city over there. And I answered that voice. I was going crazy. I said, fine, I'll do your idea. But if it doesn't work, I'm doing my idea. And that day I packed up everything and I left and went to this other city. It's not as though they wouldn't have been able to find me, but I did it. And sure enough, I walked into a very strong, big book community of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I walked in, they saw I was dying of untreated alcoholism. And they went to work like something you've never seen. It was like the ER of AA. And they surrounded me. They appointed me a sponsor. I never got to pick. And my sponsor was one of those hardcore, I don't care what you think, I don't care how you feel, do it anyway types. That all these things are burned in my brain now. Like, how free do you want to be? Every time I'd argue, you know, okay, fine. And basically kicked my butt through the steps. Saved my life. We did them very quickly. I think by my first visit, I was writing my inventory. Step one, two, and three. And I asked my sponsor, because I've seen my sponsor work with other people. And I said, why'd you go so fast with me? I've seen how you do it. My sponsor said, because I didn't know if you were going to be alive or dead by the next day. We didn't have time to waste. So through that, I did work all the steps. It was a battle. Step three was a battle. My old ideas, my prejudices. God was number one on my fourth step. You can see the problem that I had. But I did it because I had the immense pain. And I look at pain now as a gift. It is only when I am in great pain that I become willing to change anything. It is when I have that gift of desperation that I become willing to go to any lengths. I have never forgotten that pain. That 11 and a half months was probably worse than the drinking itself. Because my solution of alcohol was removed, wasn't working anymore anyway, but it was removed and replaced with nothing, which was a living hell. And I knew that I only had two alternatives, not choices. One or the other was gonna happen. It wasn't that, you know, I had two alternatives. And that was to go back to my old way of living and come to the bitter end. Or accept this way of life, whether I liked it or not, whether I agreed or not. And the interesting thing is when I started doing exactly what was outlined in the book, I got results. Whether I believed it was going to happen didn't make any difference. Whether I wanted to do it didn't make any difference. If I did it, I got the results. And my time's up, but I want to tell you, I'm still baffled by life. There's so many things I'm baffled by. I mean, I don't know. Am I supposed to wear a mask, not wear a mask now? I don't know what's going on in this world. I'm just baffled. You know, so many things baffle me. But the great thing is, and you know, the other thing is I no longer have all those possessions and the power and the prestige and anything like that, but I have something I wouldn't exchange for all of those ever again. And that is I have peace. You know, and it doesn't matter that I'm baffled by life. And it doesn't matter that I really don't have any potential. That doesn't matter. Because I'm telling you, all I have to do is do to the best of my ability, perfectly imperfect, but to the best of my ability, what is outlined in this book. And you know what? It works. If it didn't, I wouldn't still be here 12 years later. I want to thank you so much for my new life, for the peace that I have gotten, for the freedom I have received. And thank you for having me here tonight.
Thank you so much, Judith. That was amazing. You guys have the privilege of unmuting if you'd like to say thank you.
Thank you, Judith.
Oh my goodness. Awesome. Thank you, Judith. That was a wonderful story. You're a good storyteller too. Thank you.
Judith, that was wonderful.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you, Judith.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judith.
Thank you, Judith.
That's remarkable. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to take the meeting back for now. We'll get another opportunity to say thanks at the end of the meeting. So let's give Judith a break here. We'll do the seventh tradition. I'll just remind everybody, if you have questions, please send them to the user questions and we'll get those rolling here in about 4 or 5 minutes, maybe even less. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. There is a link in the chat for our PayPal account. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Lisa.
Let Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. The Women's Norfolk City Jail is looking for women to either host, volunteer, to speak, or just be there. We're needing people to just be there in the meeting. If you have a year or more of sobriety, please, I'm posting my info in the chat. If that's all right, David, I'm sorry I did it without asking. But anyway.
It's fine.
Okay, and there's also the 12 Concept meeting. It's at every fourth Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8. You know, I never really knew there was concepts until I hit Intergroup. And the first meeting was wonderful. So there's 12 months and 12 concepts. So each month they'll be doing a new concept. So please join that meeting too. Thank you.
Thank you. Howard, you got your hand up. Do you have an announcement? All righty then. All right, so where does that put us? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. If you're shy, you can also send an email to info@simpleactions.net. So once again, please send your questions to Larry. Let's see what we got in the questions bag. All right, we got a couple coming in. Keep them coming. Oh, Judith, that was amazing. I'm not even going to read these questions. I want to know if the feds ever came after you and after you got sober.
Oh, I forgot to add that. Okay, so what happened is I didn't hear, you know, for the longest time. I can tell you for years, I never said a word about any of this. They never came after me. And about... 6 years into my sobriety, I was back on the reservation and for good reasons this time. And I ran into D, that's what we called him, D. And he was out of prison and he was sober. And I was able to go and make amends to him and talk to him and discuss. And I asked him, I was like, D, why didn't you tell them? Why didn't you tell him? You know, you could have gotten a really good deal. Why didn't you tell him? And because he never said a word. He did not tell them about me. And he looked at me and he said, because you are always so nice to me. Now that may sound really sweet, but it was like a knife in my heart. I wasn't sweet to him. He had cocaine. Okay. I'm willing to go to any lengths. So that wasn't true. And here's the deal. A lot of people, I'm pretty active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm pretty active in service. And here's the deal. How do you, and it's not that I'm beating myself up. I've made my amends. I have freedom and I have peace. But here's the deal. Someone went to prison while I went free. He went to prison. I went free. I belong in prison, but I went free. How can I not be of service to the thing that gave me such tremendous freedom and a new way of life? How can I not? You know, it says that if we work the 12 steps, that as a result of working the 12 steps, we have a spiritual experience. And I believe that a transformed heart demands to serve, not out of obligation or fear, but out of gratitude. And I've learned that gratitude is not a feeling, it's an action. And I just, it's like, how can I not give back to this fellowship? How can I not stand by the door and wait for the next Judith to walk in? How can I not? I went free while someone else went to prison. So that's the risk. But I can tell you that I no longer work in that profession. I can tell you that. That's not happening. But I'm telling you, I wouldn't exchange what I have back for that. that lifestyle and the money and all of that. I really wouldn't.
Right on. We have a question here. Can you expand upon the importance of not delaying going through the steps?
Well, oh my gosh, life and death. You know, so many people say that they do step one, right? But it says that we admitted that we were alcoholic or whatever. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. Sorry, I'm going to get it all mixed up when I try and quote. Admitted I was powerless over alcohol. If I'm powerless over alcohol, what does that mean? Well, it means I'm an alcoholic. If I'm an alcoholic, what does that mean? It means I have alcoholism. If I have alcoholism, what does that mean? It means I have a fatal illness. Here's the thing. Have I really done step one? Do my actions reflect the fact that I believe that I'm an alcoholic? If I was told I had another fatal illness like cancer and it was progressing, would I not listen to everything the doctor said? Would I ever miss a chemo appointment? Would I ever skip a doctor's appointment because I'm too tired or something better came up or he didn't want me to go or she didn't want me to go or my kids were whining, they don't want me to go? Would I ever not go to my doctor's appointments? Do I really know and understand what alcoholism is? And do I really know and understand that I am powerless? This is not a matter of choice. There are two alternatives. I'm either gonna die from this, drunk or sober, or I'm going to get into recovery. So the question becomes is, why are you delaying the solution? Why are you delaying your treatment, so to speak? Why are you delaying it? It just, the only reason I can think of is because you really, me went for 11 and a half months, never really did step one. It says in the big book that we admitted to our innermost being that we are alcoholic or that we're powerless over alcohol. And it goes from here into here. And the day, see, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 weeks straight every single night. And I would not say I was an alcoholic. I would just say I'm Judith. And I would glare at the person next to me like, what's your problem? You know, you got an issue with me. I would not say I was an alcoholic because somehow I knew that if I said those words, everything would change. Because I was not there because I thought I was there. I could not imagine not drinking again. I thought, well, I'll give it 6 months. But I wasn't going to say I was an alcoholic because intuitively I knew that if I was an alcoholic, that meant that I had a fatal illness. And finally, when I said it, I knew that I was either going to drink myself to death, kill myself, or eventually, you know, I was going to have to accept what you guys said, and I didn't want to. Why the danger of delaying the steps is life and death. This will kill you drunk or sober. It progresses. And it just is a matter of how much pain can you take. It's bad. But if we really do step one, I'll end with this. This is why when I wake up in the morning, I have something in my day that protects my sobriety date. Something. Just like perhaps an example would be, I'm a diabetic and every day I need to take my insulin. I've admitted to my innermost being that I have a fatal illness. And so I do something every day to treat that illness. And that happens to be Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's a grave, grave, grave danger in delaying the steps. And I think it boils down to step one. We give it lip service. We think that if, you know, I don't know. We say we do step one, but my question is do our actions reflect that we've admitted that we have a fatal illness or not? And if we have, why are we delaying doing the steps?
So it's a fair assumption with the people that you work with, you would offer them to do the same thing, go through the steps quickly?
I sponsor the way I was sponsored because all I have to share is my experience. I can't make up things. I know other people sponsor different ways and it works and that's great. But if I tried to do that, it would be theory, observation. But I can only offer what I've experienced. And so I sponsor the way I was sponsored. And what I do is we do, I expect them to read the book. I give them some CDs to help, you know, reads it through and with them and whatnot. But it says, give them the book and have them read it, you know. So I expect them to participate in their own recovery and read the book. And then we meet right away. And we meet for an hour every single week. And we do a step a week. They don't get a month, 2 months, 6 months to do a four step. They either are going to do it or we're not, you know, it's like, if you're not willing to do your four step, we have to go back to the step before. And if that's a problem, we go back to the step before. And if that's a problem, we got to go back to step one. We're back at step one again. Do you realize you have a fatal illness and you're dying? Why would we delay with our four step? You know, surgery is not pleasant, but we still go and have surgery. And chemo is not pleasant, but we still go and do that. But oh my gosh, I don't want to write my inventory. You know, so my sponsees, we go through a step a week and then we'll deal with the traditions and we deal with the concepts and all sorts of good stuff.
And as you go through the steps, is it based out of the book or you have a workbook or?
Oh, no, I just do it straight from the book. They've already read. Right. I make them responsible to participate in their recovery. They read the book and then we sit down and I share with them my experience. I share different passages. I work out of the book. We don't read the book together because I assume they've already read it. But I pick out pieces to explain the step, how to do the step, what are the instructions of the step, answer questions, share my personal experience and things like that in that hour. And they always get sent away with some homework, like are there lists to write? Are there prayers to pray? Like the third step, it says, we thought well before taking this step. You go think well for, you know, let me know when you're done. I do it out of the book using the big book alone. Even on the four step, I don't use sheets. Not saying that that's bad, just saying that it wasn't done with me. And so I have no experience using worksheets or handouts or anything like that.
Right on. So I have a question here. What is a principle or principles of the program that you have found to be very important / useful in your life?
Oh, man, that's a great question. There's so many. My sponsees every Sunday. In fact, tonight I have to give them a new principle. Once they get through the steps, the ones who have been through the steps, I give them a new spiritual principle to practice for the week. And then every Sunday morning, they all start posting their experience from that week of how they've grown, what they've learned about it, what they've experienced. And then at 10 p.m. on Sunday, I give them a new one for the next week. So we're in the spiritual principles a lot because we want to grow the assets so that the character defects get starved. You know, we're focusing on the solution. Higher power deals with the character defects. Anyway, I'm going to have to say the first one that popped into my head was humility. And then why humility is, I love humility and I'm just scratching the surface on it because it means so much more than I thought. Not only do I need a lot of ego deflation and release and freedom from the bondage of self, I need all that. But also true humility is I love that quote, the poem on Dr. Bob's desk is the quietness of spirit, not to have to defend myself, not to be shaken, to know who I am and whose I am. And I always say, you know, I use the word God nowadays because it's just so easy. Everybody knows it's my higher power, whatever. But I always say I'm God's girl. and nobody messes with God's girl, meaning I don't need to be shaken internally. You may be being mean to me, but you don't mess with my inner peace anymore. True humility is understanding that I do have gifts and talents. I no longer have to hustle for worthiness. I no longer have to worry, am I enough? Do you approve? I have a prayer that I pray, God, save me from the bad and good opinions of others, because the good can be just as dangerous. To recognize my strengths, my talents, my abilities, and to then use them to serve God and God's kids. So there's so much in humility that I'm just learning. So I love focusing on that one. Also enthusiasm, got to say this, enthusiasm, which means if you break it down in the Latin, it's the essence of God, from the word theo and in. So basically it's the essence or breath of God within. And so if we're not, if we don't have enthusiasm, what is, you know, it's like, how can we not have enthusiasm when we have the breath or essence of our higher power within? So I like to, you know, really live in enthusiasm. And that's not normal. That's not normal for me. I really don't like people, and I'm more of an Eeyore than a Tigger. But enthusiasm brings a whole nother set of adventures. So yeah, I like those two right now.
Thank you. All right, I'm just going to read this as it's written. How did you deal with the dark path that breeds self-destruction? How do you avoid it instead of following it?
Can you read that one more time?
How did you deal with the dark path that breeds self-destruction? How do you avoid it instead of following it?
Not sure I know exactly what they're wanting, but I can tell you, I don't avoid anything anymore. I am powerless to avoid anything, but what I do is I seek my higher power. I must be plugged in, you know, just like a plug and a light socket. I got to be plugged into this power, or I am an alcoholic. It's not about me being strong. It's not about me avoiding temptation. I don't need triggers. I'm one big trigger, right? I can't avoid, I find my people everywhere I go. I don't have the power to avoid anything. What I do is I focus on living the spiritual principles to the best of my ability on a daily basis. I go towards the solution, and one little baby step by little baby step, and they start adding up. And, you know, it's, I let my power deal with my character defects. It took me about 2 years to have the mental obsession removed, because that first year it was on me all the time. Working the steps, it was somewhere in the second year that mental obsession was lifted from me, because I had it strong. I thought I was doing something wrong. Well, the first year I wasn't working the steps, but I was really relieved that in Dr. Bob's story, it said that he had the mental obsession for about two and a half years, something like that. So it wasn't that I was doing something wrong. It propelled me into service even more. I don't do service and I don't help people because I like you all. I do it because when I do it, I don't think about drinking, and I haven't for a very long time. I don't think about cocaine, and that was and for a very long, years and years, it's gone. But if I stop doing what I'm doing, boy, it comes back fast. It comes back very fast. And so I just don't stop doing. I found that I don't avoid the dark path. What I do is walk the path of service. I fit myself to be of maximum service to God and God's kids. It's the only reason I'm still drawing breath, is to reflect this divine love that flows through me to other people. And then I don't need to worry about avoiding anything. I get to live free. I'm not avoiding triggers or avoiding this or avoiding that. It's just like my higher power says, let's go play. And I'm like, surprise me today. What are we going to do? You know? So that's how I live. I don't know if I answered the question or not.
That was beautiful. Let's go back to, I guess, year two, as you're moving through the steps rapidly. Do you have any of those early amends stories that stand out or that you'd like to share?
Oh, well, both husbands. That was fun. And then there was this one guy I hated. All right, so the two husbands I felt guilty about, that's a whole nother story. And one of them, they're both beautiful and both are wonderful men, amazing. But I'll tell you this one, because I see that my sponsees struggle with this more than the two husband things. But I hated this person. This person used to be my best friend and then rejected me because I wasn't good enough. And this was in law school. And I did horrible things and I hated this person. And I needed, this was like one of the last things on my amends list. And I didn't want to do it. I thought that I needed to feel like I wanted to forgive him. I needed to feel like I didn't hate him. I needed to, and first I did on my fourth and fifth. I did, but I was so consumed with jealousy, actually. It wasn't hate, it was jealousy. Resentment and fear. But I couldn't admit these things. But the thing is that my sponsor's like, how free do you want to be? And so I went, he was very successful. He was always a one rung up on me in the legal profession. He was in DC Senate and blah, blah, blah. So I had to walk into his fancy office and I hated him. But I wanted to be free and I knew I owed him an amends for what I had done. And the very interesting thing happened is in the middle of the amends, all of a sudden, I felt this amazing forgiveness. It's like it came from the top above and this forgiveness flowed through me and the scales just fell off of my eyes of hatred and resentment. And I saw my best friend, the person I was best friends with. And I teared up and I felt this forgiveness and love. And I saw him again. And I looked at him and with 100% sincerity, I said, I'm so proud of you and what you've done. You did it. You did everything we always said we were going to do. And I made amends. And from that moment, I was free of all hatred, all jealousy, all resentment, all fear. And I, to this day, and I can bump into him. I am thrilled at his success. And I just have genuine appreciation for him as a person and all the hard work he has done. I gained freedom through making that amends and I didn't even want to do it. But I knew that that is what the program required. And it says in the big book, the people we hate, we take the bit in our teeth and we go to it. Doesn't say we wait until we feel better or we like them. But in the middle of making that amends, I got the results and that was amazing. Also, real quick, I hated my father. It was God and my father, number one, number two on my resentment list. And through my dad was violent. My father was not the father figure, or father of the year. But through AA, and he passed away this year. But because I made amends to my father and I got the focus off of, and I did this in my third year, I got the focus off of what kind of father he was, because the truth is he was a horrible father. But I got the focus off of what kind of father was he, and the focus on to what kind of daughter am I today? Am I the daughter I'm called to be? And that shifted. It took a lot of work, but it shifted, and I was placed in a neutral position with him. And then and at the end, it was, for the first time in my life, I felt genuine love for my father, which I had never felt before. And that was an amazing gift that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. And if for nothing else, I was so, that if that was all I got, that was enough, because I was able to walk him home at his deathbed. And he never said he loved me. I never got what I thought I needed, but we were good and I had peace, and I was able to walk him home in peace. And I watched my siblings, who are not alcoholic, don't have this program, and I watched their immense pain at his passing, because they didn't have a process to do this. And so I am just so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, just for that last year. And my father passing, and the total freedom that I had received in that relationship.
Thank you so much. We are, once again, I hope it was a quick hour and a half for you. It went rapidly for me, as it always does. I'm going to tap you for one more quick question, and then we'll close up. Is there such a thing as too many sponsees?
You know, I have no idea. I think I have no idea. I think I have too many, but how do you say no? I can't answer that. Sorry. Don't know.
Do you enjoy being a member of a home group?
Oh, it's essential and it's vital. It's the best place to plug in, make connections, and be of service. And I think my home group is awesome.
Right on.
And it's, oh, can I just say this one plug is that if you're not part of a home group, you're homeless in AA and you don't have a vote. And here's the thing, this isn't a self-help program. This isn't a selfish program. This is a helping others program. And I have a responsibility to make sure AA is strong and well for the next 85 years. And how I do that is to belong to a home group and have a vote, one person, one vote in AA, because the groups are in charge of, that's the ultimate authority in AA. And so if we aren't part of a home group, you don't have a vote of what's happening in AA. And we're just not keeping our responsibility for the next you and me to come in the doors. So vital.
Thank you so much. we'll give another opportunity to thank Judith after the Lord's Prayer. I'd like to thank everyone who participated for reading, Larry wrangling the questions, Mike for showing up on day one in Alcoholics Anonymous. How awesome is that? And Debbie, could I ask you to please read a vision for you?
Hello, I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you all. How about we virtually circle up, virtually hold hands, and close with the Lord's Prayer. There it is again. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Whew, man, that was amazing. Thank you, Judith.
Thanks, Judith.
Thanks so much, Judith. That was great.
Judith, thank you very much. That was very, very great. I loved your story.
Thank you, Judith. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was exactly what I needed tonight. That was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's nice to be with you guys.
Yeah.